The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. Great to be here with you today, but we got a lot to get into. Looking forward to hanging out with you and getting you plugged into the latest. I'm going to share a couple emails that have come in today. And if you want to email me, email for the show is drew@relevantradio.com. It's always good to hear from you. Feel free to sound off. Share. I have a lot of show suggestions coming in. I love that too. But feel free to sound off there. I can't always answer every email, just so you know. We get a lot of volume, but I do try to read everything that comes in. So know that your intentions are certainly being prayed for and certainly being read. So a lot to get into today, and I'll share an email coming up here from a deacon that I just received. But, you know, again, I turned on the news today. I mean, yesterday we were inundated with that horrible elementary shooting in Uvalde, Texas. Well, the fallout from that, the developments continue. Now the political storm is hitting us. Yesterday we played a little audio from Beto O'Rourke, and he made a scene yesterday at Governor Greg Abbott's press conference and was ultimately ushered out. I had heard that actually somebody had been in that auditorium or where the press conference was being held, holding a seat, you know, and when he came in, they let him sit down. So this was premeditated. It was pre-planned. It was an opportunity for him to sound off and advocate for his position. Democrats today, were present at a rally of mothers trying to get tougher gun laws passed. And this issue comes up a lot. And again, this is a difficult issue, isn't it? I know a lot of people grapple with the type of weapons that we can have and whether or not somebody has a right to have a weapon. And the issue of self-defense comes up and a lot of other issues. But some are now trying to blame Republicans for these shootings. And I don't think that's fair. You know, to me, it's wrong. There are some who make this moral equivalency between, you know, guns and abortion. And you'll hear that coming up a little later. I want to break that down. Just kind of an insight and an analysis that I had on the dialogue I'm hearing. I heard Whoopi Goldberg go off on this as well, saying something, oh, they're going after abortion, now they're going after your guns, you know, or some remark along those lines. And I'm thinking, did she really say that? I didn't read her. I didn't want to entertain her. I figure, you know, just because you're on television doesn't mean that what you have to say is worth listening to, right? And I don't want to give too much attention to the view or to Whoopi. But there was a representative from Arizona, and we need to pray for this guy because clearly he doesn't understand the power of prayer. His name was Ruben Gallego. He's from Arizona, and he tweeted at Representative Daryl Issa. And this is what he said. Forgive me. I'm not going to use the profanity, but you'll get the word. He tweets, F your prayers. That's how he starts this. F your prayers. They haven't worked for the last 20 mass shootings. How about passing laws that will stop these killings? And then he tweeted at Senator Ted Cruz, too, using the F word again. Just to be clear, F you, Ted Cruz. F, you know, you FM baby killer. You get the point, right? That's again, Representative Ruben Gallego of Arizona. I was just shocked by that. And I'm not the only one. I saw that tweet, and I thought, man, this man, that's a sad commentary. You know, your prayers haven't worked, right? F your prayers. What an insult to God. What an insult to Christians. What an insult probably to a lot of his constituents. There's a deacon who listens to the show regularly, and he emailed me. And Deacon, thank you for doing that. And let me just share what he says. He said this to me. He said, quote, ironically, Congressman Gallego called Senator Cruz a baby killer. He left out the expletive, of course. While Gallego supports abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy, and Cruz has worked to protect preborn babies. So just on that point alone, you see the disparity, right? You see the disconnect. You see how false the narrative and the rhetoric is from this man. I mean, he can tell somebody else they're a baby killer, like Ted Cruz. He called him an effing baby killer. And yet he supports abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. 9 months. Did you ever see a baby, a preemie born? 8, 7 months. Did you ever see the imagery of a child in the womb? He's all for killing it. Doesn't matter. And yet Cruz has been an advocate for life. He then added this. This is what the deacon said. He says, let us pray and let's allow families to mourn, to bury their loved ones, mostly children, before we have needed political discussions on how to protect life. That is, I think, well said, and I'm grateful for his email there. We're going to see so much more of this. It really is unfortunate how divided we have become over the issue of life. To me, it is quite a no-brainer. You know, I think most rational people know when life begins, you know, but there's a large part of this country, unfortunately, who thinks otherwise. And we really need to pray that those scales that are in their eyes are left. And we have to pray for a conviction in heart, for conversion of heart. I believe that's a prayer that God always hears and answers. I believe we need to pray. I was at Mass this afternoon, and I prayed for our leaders. I prayed for Nancy Pelosi, for Joe Biden. I prayed for Congressman Gallego. And I just, God loves them as much as he loves me. You know, and we, you and I both, when we hear these types of attacks, we just need to pray. You know, we want all life saved. The Daily Wire, they reported yesterday that the Arizona Department of Education is doing something I want to make you aware of. You know, and I grappled with this when I saw this story because I said, gosh, I've been talking a lot about this week. But then the other side of me said, you know what, Drew? It's like a puzzle piece, you know, and every one of these puzzle pieces you click together show the whole picture, right? And here's another piece of the puzzle, so to speak, of this attack on our kids. And we've been talking a lot about it, and I'm so happy the parents are now standing up. I'm glad these stories are coming to light, that I can share them with you so you can both pray and take action against these. The Arizona Department of Education links to chat rooms on its websites for minors that deal with LGBTQ issues, to discuss sex and gender with adult moderators present, but without their parents necessarily knowing. Like, the parent is the enemy of the state, isn't it? I mean, I don't understand that. Why wouldn't you want the next generation? They're going to be the doctors that are going to be operating on you, right? They're going to be the future leaders. They're going to be the people that you need well-formed, right? Why do you want to distort and attack and destroy innocence? So here, parents don't know. They got these adult moderators in there. They got this website dealing with all these issues. So the department directed minors to two different websites. Both are private organizations, by the way, that the state is contracting with. And the organizations, well, they rely on volunteers, adult volunteers or staff to facilitate those chat rooms. And they don't, here's the thing, they don't verify age, right? They don't verify the age of those joining the chats beyond asking applicants for a birth date. And who can't say, oh, yeah, I'm over 18 or I'm whatever, right? You can lie online. No one's checking your ID. One of those groups, they collaborate with Planned Parenthood, PFLAG, and a gay organization called CenterLink. And of course, the whole idea is to affirm. And I want to underline the word affirm. They want to inculcate. They want to affirm. They want to drive home. They want to make normal, they want to push these kids in their confused thinking about what their sexuality is. And they're not doing good. I mean, they're doing harm is what they're doing. Instead of helping these children, they're harming them. So I want you to be aware of it. Again, we've got a government, you know, institution here involved. That's the thing that really strikes me, the Arizona Department of Education. So let's just hope that the appropriate authorities in Arizona, they clean up your mess, you know. So putting it on your radar, if you're a citizen of Arizona, that's what's coming out from your representatives to the Department of Education. Arizona's a beautiful state. I love it very much. But boy, as a parent in that state, I would be certainly concerned. One other thing we've been talking about for a very long time, Congressman Chris Smith, who joins me here often, is on the front lines of this issue. I've talked about the genocide that's taking place over in China. Here's one more little bit of news just to bring you up to speed on the story that you and I have been following together here. There have been some leaked documents from China, and I always love when this happens because they're very telling, right? These documents get out, and they show that Xi Jinping, he wants to completely eliminate the Uyghurs. You know, some people speculated that, but now it's in print. It's in black and white. there was a hacker, and I don't know what happened to him, or I think they closed this hole, but there was a hacker that got into China's police database for that area of the country, and they found, they unlocked just troves of documents showing Xi Jinping plan, Xi Jinping's plan. I got tongue tied. They basically, you know, uncovered his intentions. There's these lists. They have huge numbers of names. They got photos of people who've been detained and they've been put into prison camps for, of course, so-called re-education. Right? It doesn't surprise me. I mean, clearly you can see just by the optics of what happened. People blindfolded and zip-tied and being put on chains and on trains and put into re-education camps. The very few that have been able to escape, you know, telling horror stories of forced pregnancies, of rape, of torture, of sterilization. I mean, this is a modern-day genocide. These are modern-day concentration camps, if you will. And we look back again, I always say, you know, we look back on history and we're like, oh my gosh, if I was alive in 1940 when Hitler was doing what he was doing to the Jews and to the Christians and others in those concentrate, no way, you know. It's easy to say that. I mean, yeah, I think I would certainly be willing to do whatever I could. What are we doing today? What are we doing today for those who are being raped and sterilized, who are being forced, you know, to be impregnated, who are being tortured, who are made slaves? So those documents, again, they came out. They're only up to 2019. Here's the interesting part of the story for me. Apparently, the Chinese government or officials, they realized they were hacked. And they changed their computer system that year. And it looks like the hacker was not able to get back in past their protections. But I think it's very revealing, very telling about where we are. On another note, you know, I'm a geek, right? Somebody said the other day, Bill Maher actually said, you know, if you let kids be what they want to be, you know, they'd be fairies and princes, right? Or something to that effect. The other day, it made me think, what did I want to be when I was a kid? You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be an astronaut. I just thought that would be so cool, right? And I thought about doing it, but that wasn't my vocation. And today here I sit hanging out with you, and I could not be happier. But I love the mystery of God's creation. I just find joy in it. I find wonder. And I find God in it. Well, I saw a story where something weird is going on in the universe. And look, it's not me saying that. It's not my word, weird. That's NASA. And, of course, you're probably thinking to yourself, oh, what's this, UFOs? What are you talking about? You know, you always hear something weird's going on, right? Black holes, to me, are kind of weird, right? Pretty amazing. But there's weird because we've never seen what's happening before. It's weird because we thought, you know, what was going on is actually different than what is going on. So scientists are making some new discoveries, new findings. The Hubble Space Telescope, right? What a powerful instrument. It can look back in time. It's pretty amazing how powerful that thing can reach. And it's been collecting data on stars. And scientists, you know, they call these mile post markers. And they're particular stars that they've been using to figure out just how fast the universe is expanding, right? So Hubble's been getting a lot more information on them than they were able to get from Earth. And what scientists are now finding is that the universe, it's actually expanding at a faster rate of speed than the rate it expanded right at the Big Bang. Can you imagine that? It is expanding faster, a faster rate of speed than the rate it expanded right at the Big Bang. And that's perplexing astronomers. A lot of mysteries happening up there. So I thought we'd go to our resident astronomer, a beautiful and quite bright Jesuit priest who is a research astronomer for the Vatican Observatory. He's also the president of the National Committee for Astronomy in the Vatican City State for the International Astronomical Union. It's good to have back with us today, Father Chris Corbelly. Hey, Padre, good afternoon.
Drew, it's good to speak with you again, with all your listeners, too.
Well, I am grateful for your time, and especially for your expertise and your understanding of this. Let's go back first. Let's do some basics. Let's start with calculating what happened at the Big Bang? I know it's complicated, but how did scientists arrive at the rate of expansion at the start of creation? I find that pretty wonderful, too. But bring us back in time and explain that theory, maybe for those who don't know, and how they came up with that rate of expansion.
Well, I was just looking up, thanks to a lovely review in Science and Religion, there are six main right at the Big Bang. There was an initial superinflation, kind of, so with any explosion, and that's a good model to have. There's always expansion, but right at the beginning of our universe, there was a superinflation, tiny fraction of a second we can't even imagine. But and then after that, the universe seemed to expand kind of in a more regular, more modest fashion. And it's that more modest fashion that is being a real puzzle at the moment. So there is a discrepancy between, you described how the Hubble Space Telescope for the last 30 years, so it's a good long time, has been steadily monitoring these standard candle, very bright stars in galaxies that we have seen certain type of star explode, what's called a supernova 1A. Okay, that's astronomy speak. And through these 30 years, 42, they've really calibrated extraordinarily well. How distant these galaxies are in which the supernova exploded. And so the kind of nearby expansion rate, you know, what we see at the moment of the universe, and that's about 45 miles an hour per something called a megaparsec, a huge distance. Astronomers work in parsecs rather than light years, but it's just a parsec is just over 3 light years in distance. So anyway, 45 is what we measure nearby. But if you go back to the kind of the little bit of heat, the glow that's left after this incredible explosion or Big Bang in the universe, and then kind of calculate how it has cooled down over the years. Well, and there's a satellite been up there called the Planck satellite that's been measuring how, you know, hot that glow is at the moment. That gives another, if you sort of kind of wind the clock back to when that glow is, you know, as hot as the original Big Bang, you get another figure, which instead of 45 miles is 42 miles per second per megaparsec. Now, okay, 45 and 42, who's bothered? Because actually the accuracy with which Hubble has found those 42 stars, you know, to be standard candles is about half a mile, an hour per second. So, the errors are bigger than that. So what's happening? You know, as our universe, you know, beginning, its rate of expansion has changed, it would seem. Why? Good question.
Yeah. NASA's saying maybe some new physics is required. What are they thinking of? What are they suggesting? And what's it reveal?
It's not at the moment. I think it's a revealing puzzle. Really, NASA seems to be, and the researchers that have the paper out seem to be really puzzled about it. Mm-hmm. I think it's we're going to learn about the universe. What we know is the expansion rate in the last third of our universe seems to have been increased enough. Maybe not. So all kinds of things.
All right.
The heavens still, astound and make us puzzled.
They do. Father, before I let you go, there was one other story I just came across. And again, I'm probably... I'm geeking out, but I'm sure a lot of people are saying, oh, this is boring. I'm going to switch the channel, you know, when it comes to some of this stuff. I find God in creation. Pope Benedict had said that one time as well, and I love what he said. I'll pull up his quote. I'll share that with everyone. But, you know, speaking of new physics, the other story I had seen was that some of your colleagues at the Vatican Observatory They came up with some new mathematical formulations that show that there's a beauty and a harmony to creation. Tell me about that. What's that all about?
Well, I'd have to consult the experts to really find out, because what they speak is way beyond my language of kind of stars and galaxies. This is cosmology. But yes, yeah. This is Father Gabriele Giunti, and who's a regular staff member. And then we have an associates, this is Father Matteo Gallavani. And they both have been working on, I think it's basically quantum theory applied to that initial expansion of the universe, that incredible expansion for the fraction of a second. And what they seem to have found is that it kind of makes good mathematical sense. Again, many theories about that, half a dozen and counting variations of that. But they seem to have found it as kind of more ordered, it following mathematical equations rather than total chaos than other theories will have it. And again, one sees, they don't say this proves God, it can't, but one sees sort of the hand of the God whom we know in that.
No doubt about it. Makes me think of what Pope Benedict said. In the past, he says, when we see these types of things, that, we see God's signature in creation, that the heavens are telling really of the glory of God.
As the psalmist said, I've got that idea that's an instinct that we as humans have about the heavens, and it seems true, But as you say, you can't prove the supernatural, the non-physical, which is God, from the physical, but you can sure get a wonderful idea.
I got you. Hey, Father, thanks for being here. Great to talk with you. I appreciate the insight. Normally we talk about the Christmas star. It's great to have you here talking about some of these great advances. We'll catch up again soon, okay?
Bless you and all who are listening.
Thank you, Father. I appreciate this. Father Chris Corbelli, say a prayer for him. He is a research astronomer for the Vatican Observatory. More straight ahead when we come back. Let me share one final thought from the Holy Father. He says, the universe is not the result of chance, as some would like to make us believe. In contemplating it, we are asked to interpret it in something profound. The wisdom of the Creator, the inexhaustible creativity of God, for His love is infinite for us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's a classic, too, isn't it? Hey, it's good to be with you. Thanks for joining me. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we will pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, give you an early heads up today so you can call your loved ones, tell them about it. They can listen on the app if they don't have it. Gives you plenty of time to download it. And, of course, you can always join us as well on the station you're listening to here. They can listen to you, join you there, or of course, on the website. So if you want to get your prayer intentions in and you can't make it to the phone to call in and join us, it's at Drew Mariani Show. So early, Maggie will bring those intentions to the air today. So we'll try our best to get you on the air. Right now, I'm going to pray for this country, right? And I want to talk about, and I'd love to hear from you on this issue, too. This moral equivalency that we're seeing to what happened in Texas and abortion. All right, the very beginning of the program, I don't know if you're with me, I shared in some of the news what Congressman Ruben Gallego from Arizona said. He called Senator Ted Cruz of Texas an expletive baby killer, right? I won't use the word. And of course, Senator Cruz had nothing to do with what happened in that elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. I mean, it was a tragedy. It was horrible. Actually, on this point, let me just stop for a minute because this may not sound right. It may not even go over well. When I saw the picture of the shooter, now, first and foremost, I have to say my heart goes out to any parent who lost those children. Those children were beautiful. You look at those pictures, you take a look at those teachers. My sister-in-law is a school teacher. She teaches that age group. I mean, I just can't imagine the devastation that the families and the community and really the nation is feeling. It ripples out. One of the things that I felt compassion and mercy for was the shooter. And I know that people say, how could you feel sorry for him? His mother was a drug addict. He was going between his mother's and his grandmother's. He had no father in his life. Clearly, there was some mental illness or there were some issues that were going on with this boy that were missed. He clearly needed help. He needed love. He needed some sort of direction. To drive anyone to do this, to kill innocent children like that, is just unconscionable. It's unimaginable. But my heart does go out for that kid. And I think we need to pray for his soul and pray for his family. I saw them on the air too, saying they had no idea if they had any signs, they would have intervened. I saw his grandfather mentioning. So, we're called to be merciful, and not to excuse action, but I prayed for that man today when I was at Mass. I did. Clearly troubled, but that's another note. But yeah, when these events happen, right? What happens? People, they don't want to waste an opportunity, right? So what do? They go ahead and they try to advocate for whatever policy it is that they want, gun control, whatever it might be. So this Congressman Gallego from Arizona, this representative, outspoken supporter of abortion, right? I mentioned he champions it all through all 9 months. Cruz, quite the opposite. He's tried to help, preborn mothers and is a pro-life guy. Now, saying that Cruz had nothing, to do with the shootings at the school, I know their listeners are going to be upset because I know you believe that more gun control laws are going to prevent this kind of mass murder since Senator Cruz has actively worked to prevent such laws from being passed, therefore, the weapons that ended up in the hands of this kid who, brutally and cold-heartedly murdered these children, you think maybe it could have been averted. And maybe it can. We can talk about that. We can talk about whether greater gun constriction, like Australia, will lead to less gun violence. I mean, there might be other forms of violence and murder that take place. But we've seen these protest signs that say, pro-life would be regulating this. You see those signs? Pro-life would be regulating this. With a picture of a handgun below it. Not this, and a picture of a uterus below that. So pro-life would be regulating this. They show you a handgun. And then right below that, there's a picture of a uterus. Not this. All right. So you want to control the guns, but it's okay to murder the baby, right? So in other words, people are making this moral equivalency between what happened in Uvalde and abortion. If you're truly pro-life, you would regulate guns, not the uterus. Another sign said this. Let me take a moment to honor the sacrifice of our brave school children who laid down their lives to protect our right to bear arms. See, I think that's totally uncalled for. I don't think that's right. That sign, I think, is pretty offensive, especially to responsible gun owners. Pope Francis yesterday, he spoke out. He says, hey, it's time to say enough to this indiscriminate trafficking of guns. That's the Pope. It's time to say enough to the indiscriminate trafficking of guns. Of course, the guns this kid used, they were bought legally. He cleared background checks. So in that sense, the guns weren't trafficked in the sense of the word. But the point stands. He's saying that the world's awash in guns, and somehow we need to cut down on how many there are. So let's talk about the issue. I've invited Dr. Joseph Capizzi, a professor of moral theology at the Catholic University of America, to give us some perspective, to sort through some of this moral equivalency we're seeing and how we can properly understand it. And as Catholics, as followers of Christ, what is the correct approach? Doctor, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Good afternoon.
My pleasure. Happy to be here again, Drew.
Yeah, I'm delighted to have you. Obviously, what this kid did was horrific. I mean, it has to be unequivocally condemned. Does the condemnation, though, extend to people who support the Second Amendment? I hear other people say, hey, well, what about cars? A lot of drunk drivers use cars and they injure people. The car didn't kill the person, the drunk did. Sort that out if you could. I mean, how are we to better understand some of these arguments that we're hearing?
Yeah, look, I think you did a great job of setting this up, right? And you began by acknowledging the fact that what happens during, you know, horrors like this is people often will just sort of plop the horror into their way of seeing the world and try to use the occasion to raise that concern again. And that's apparently what I think it was a congressman you referred to before who's making a kind of moral equivalency between, I guess, support of the Second Amendment, or support of a sort of permissive attitude towards the Second Amendment and support of abortion. And that, right, that obviously seems both like the wrong kind of equivalency to make and also the wrong thing to be doing right now, right? I think we all probably agree that something has gone terribly wrong in our society where parents reasonably are apprehensive about sending their children to school, right? Right. And because children are being killed in schools. And as a society, that should be the focus of our attention, right, with regard to this issue. What is happening that is, on the one hand, creating young, mostly men, right, who have no regard for innocent human life and have made conscious decisions and plans to go into these environments, you know, grocery stores, schools, and kill innocent people, right? What are we doing wrong that's producing people like that? And then I think a related question would be, what is happening where we're also allowing people like this to have easy access to weapons that allow them to cause so much harm in such a little amount of time, right? These are sort of converged issues that we should be smart enough to think about as issues that we can tackle together, right? Issues that ought to be animating all of us. We all ought to be animating ourselves around the shared conviction that we don't want our parents and children to be apprehensive about going to school or people going to the grocery store.
Yeah, my guest today, Dr. Joseph Capizzi. I'll take a few of your calls. If you're on hold, I'll get to you. The number's 888-914-9149. I received an email this morning from a listener in, I think it was Maine, listening to us on 106.7 FM there in northern Maine. And his name's Bill. He says, Planned Parenthood doesn't kill children. You're thinking of the NRA. So I mean, people are really passionate about this gun issue, and they do equivocate, if you will, this issue of abortion. Is there any kind of moral equivalency here between abortion and gun owners or those who support gun ownership?
No. Look, full disclosure, I own guns. I know people who own guns, right? I've grown up around people who hunt. I'm sure many of your listeners have as well, right? There are people that you and I know, your listeners will know, they might be these people themselves, who they hunt for food, right? So in a way, gun ownership is not the issue here, right? It's the proliferation of certain kinds of weapons that are animating people. That's really what, you know, is animating people. And people on one side who want to draw this false moral equivalency are using the occasion to say, at all to support gun rights is to support gun rights without any restrictions and so on, right? Most, as you know, most hunters, right, most people who hunt want there to be restrictions on gun ownership, mm-hmm, right? Want sure. there to be reasonable, right, licensing laws and so on in order for people to reasonably be, you know, going into the woods and hunting and so on, right? So no, right? There's not. But let's not be distracted by those kinds of crazy equivalences either, right? We don't, right? We want, right? The real thing that should be, right, concerning you and me, Drew, and your listeners, I'm sure, is mm-hmm. this kind of, again, I mean, I'm a parent of children, right? I'm sure you are too. I can't imagine thinking, you know, when you send your kid off to school with a lunch and a pat on the head, that you're thinking to yourself, right, what's going to happen today? Like, you know, what is this going? Is this lightning going to strike my child's school or my children's school? Something has gone deeply wrong, right? Where we're in a society where that is happening, and sure. that ought to be animating all of us. And those of us who recognize there's no moral equivalency here ought to be saying, like, we're going to ignore that stupidity, right? We're trying to solve this problem, right? And we'll try to solve other problems too, right? For those of us like you and me, right, we're going to also try to solve the abortion problem.
Right.
Right. We can work on these problems simultaneously and make distinctions. But this ought to be where our energy is, I think, is devoted. Is let's try to solve this problem. This is a deep problem. And again, it's not just schools. It's grocery stores. It's, people going to concerts. Right. It's
post offices.
Right. Yeah, that's right. You're
right. Let's grab a few calls for you. Dr. Fritz in Los Angeles is listening, and he's got a comment. He wants to join the conversation. Dr. Fritz, welcome. You're on the air with Dr. Capizzi.
Hi, Drew. I wanted to say I really love your show. But, one of the reasons that really strikes me, and actually mentioned this yesterday, is what Mother Teresa said in the 1990s. That if we can accept that even a mother can kill her own child, how can we tell other people not to kill one another? Any country that accepts abortion is not telling its people to love, but to use any violence to get what it wants. And I think all these other arguments about the cause of the violence, so they may well be valid, but the point is something as fundamental as a mother protecting her own child, if we negate that as being extremely important as a society, and we're in deep trouble.
You're so right about that, Doctor. Thank you for joining us. Dr. Capizzi, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, no, look, the first point I made was, right, we have to ask ourselves, how do we live in a culture that is producing people with such disregard for innocent human life, right? And that's what Dr. Fitz is pointing to, that one element of this, of course, is that we live in a culture where, I mean, right, where people can proclaim a complete disregard for innocent human life in utero, right? I mean, even mothers, doing it, the fathers of these children doing the same thing, right? So this for sure one element in this coarsening that we've seen in our culture towards innocent human life. That's relevant. I think the doctor's right about that.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Mary. She's a good – Dr. Fritz, thanks for the call. Mary in Durham, Maine, read a great op-ed, she says, from Peggy Noonan, who I think is just a wonderful journalist. I always appreciate her perspective. Mary, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for having me, Drew. And really what Peggy Noonan said was exactly what Dr. Fitz just said, which is, if the root of this violence goes back to the way we look at life in general, and we live in a culture of death, and contraception and abortion are at the root of the violence we see. Just like, your guest, if we can't protect our own children in the womb, how can we protect them at school? How can we protect them at the supermarket? If we tell these young men who feel completely disenfranchised from society that life has no value, then they're not going to value it. And of course, if they feel completely rejected by society, they're going to strike out and they're going to take life. It doesn't have any meaning. It doesn't have any value. We have to start with the fundamentals. And until we acknowledge in our own selves that our society is based on violence and prosperity is the God we're chasing, then we're going to see this over and over and over.
Yeah, hey, Mary, thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing that. I'll have to check out Peggy's article. I've not seen that. Doctor, let's pick up on that, because I think what she said there was what was right. The big question, how do we heal? And ultimately, how do we change from this culture of death and culture of violence? I mean, we're dealing with fatherlessness. We're dealing with violence in video games. We're dealing with a contraceptive abortive mentality in the culture. We see this godlessness permeating the culture. What do we do, right, as followers of Christ? Because we have to get to the heart of this. If we want to, if you want to get the infection out, you got to get the pus out, right? You got to get to the heart of that problem. We got to get the sickness out. How do we begin to heal? Well, in your opinion, what are the next steps, and what can we do personally?
Right. Well, I think Mary's point was great, right? And part of what she's describing essentially is a kind of spiritual problem, right? This is a deep spiritual problem, and all the things you named, and you could add racism, to this as well. What we see is the view of many of us, right, or maybe even more structurally within our society, of the expendability of other people, right? So what happens with me, right, and the rest of us is we kind of we go on living, right? We go on living and we distract ourselves with other things. It doesn't really pertain to me immediately unless it actually happens to me. And our society allows us to console ourselves with you know, our stock market gains or with sports or, you know, something else. We get distracted and we can view these things and these people as expendable aspects of our lives. Yeah. We have to, you know, our tradition, Pope John Paul II, Pope Francis, Pope Benedict, et cetera, our tradition always reminds us of this kind of like interconnectedness of all of us. What happens to one of us matters to all of us. And that relates to the point about abortion that Dr. Fritz made, you know, that we've got to somehow recognize our commonality, right? And that we are all in this together, you know, that we're not going to solve these problems unless we see the worth of every individual human being, no matter, you know, stage of life, no matter color, no matter, you know, wealth, you know, or influence, et cetera. And that's, most of us fail at it. I mean, so it begins with us, right? Self-criticism, right. Self-analysis, prayer, right? And then we have to work the policy.
It's such a great point. What's wrong with the world? I am, right? The change has got to begin with me, right? It begins with us, the man in the mirror. We got to look at ourselves and really change our own life, our own perspective. And the rest, I think, will certainly follow. There was a caller off air who says, I'm a nurse. I work in the OR. I've seen people who've gotten abortions for miscarriage. Am I reading this right, Maggie? And I've seen the live babies before they were killed. I'd never do it again. So just commenting on the culture of death comments that we have here and how pervasive it is. Doctor, stay with me. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take a few more telephone calls. I only have about 10 minutes or so left with Dr. Capizzi. If you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on. We're taking a look at this horrible shooting down in Texas, the loss of life, and so many of the arguments that are now being raised, this moral equivalency we're seeing to gun control and to so many other issues. Just trying to sort through it. What's at the heart of it? And what is our response as followers of Christ? That conversation continues right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, coming up in just about 10 minutes or so, we'll stop and we'll pray. I think it's one of the most important things we can do. We can pray for conversion of our own heart, and especially those who have the ability to influence, whether they're legislators or entertainers or in the medical community or our higher levels of education. Let's pray for our country, too. Boy, we need healing, don't we? We need peace. My guest today is Dr. Joseph Capizzi. If you want to join us, you can dial in 888-914-9149. He's a professor of moral theology at the Catholic University of America, co-author of A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching. So I've asked him to stop by today to take a look at what's now unfolding. We're all shocked by what took place, right? We're all horrified by what took place. I saw an article earlier today where it says that these shootings, even though they're in a local area, they really do ripple across the country, and we all feel traumatized by it. And clearly that has been the case. When I look at those young children, their faces, and I hear from their families, it brings tears to your eyes. I just can't imagine the pain and the agony and the senselessness of all this. But then you see a lot of anger and you see a lot of manifestation of different ideologies being pushed. I had shared, if you're just joining me, some of the signs I've seen out there where it says, you know, pro-life would be regulating this, and they show you a picture of gun, not this, and then they show you a picture of a uterus, you know. And we see this moral equivalency made to those who, you know, cherish their Second Amendment or want to have guns to some of these other issues that are out there. And Dr. Capizzi joins us today just to give us some perspective on that. I want to go back to the phones. Before I do, let me just ask you, you know, one thing. You know, the Pope talked about the indiscriminate trafficking of guns. And when the Pope speaks, I always want to listen. I want to hear what he's going to say. Now, I know that happens within the criminal world. In the case of a lot of these school shooters and these mass shooters, a lot of these guns were bought legally. you know, people pass background checks, or maybe they were taken from, their parents or somebody else that had owned them. What's the Holy Father driving at here, and how can we best interpret his words?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I don't know the quotation, right? I'm sure it was not in English. The trafficking is a strange word, right? So let's assume he means something, right? Like there's way too much accessibility of guns in the United States, right? Or something like that, right? And I think we all share, I assume, everybody wants to have a society where the wrong people do not have easy access to weapons that can kill large numbers of people, right? I can't imagine that there's anybody who would disagree with that. Now you're down to policy questions, right? How do we get to that place where fewer and fewer of the wrong people can get access to these kinds of weapons? And you can argue it from different perspectives, right? One side clearly wants to argue it from the perspective of, let's just reduce the numbers of these sorts of weapons, right? That's perhaps even the easiest thing to do, right, is stop the manufacture of certain kinds of weapons or ban certain kinds of carriages of ammunition and so on, right? The other side, I hate to talk in terms of sides, but another party might say something along the lines of, we have to identify the wrong people, right? We have to find out who the wrong people are and make sure that they're not getting them. So my guess is he's trying to get at that, right? And there's no question that people outside the United States look at the United States as a place, right, that's basically drowning in guns, right? We have guns like few other places on the planet, if any, right? And that strikes them as, befuddling, or more, right? Like completely confusing. Why do you allow so many weapons to proliferate in your society? And for most people, saying freedom isn't going to be a sufficient answer to that question, right? And it's probably not to you or me either, right? We recognize that things like this ought to be regulated. The questions now are, how do we regulate them and so on? And, I keep going back to this point. Yeah. We're in the wrong spot, right? This is you're going to pray for our country in a few minutes, right? Yeah. Precisely because we all recognize something has gone deeply wrong. You and I went to school, and I don't think we thought for a second that somebody would come into our schools, right? Yeah, never crossed our minds, our parents' minds, right? And how is it this case? Or go to the grocery store and get shot up? Something is deeply wrong, and we all should be. We all should be unsatisfied with our political class that it cannot come up with reasonable ways of addressing these kinds of problems.
I agree. We're so polarized, so divided. We need to find way to bridge that gap. Narita is listening to us in Dallas. She's actually a preschool teacher. Narita, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dre and Doctor. Yeah, it's just a comment about when I hear these devastating news, my heart broken out and in tears. I had a student 1 year that it was a 4 years old little boy. And when I was seeing the profession topic and I asked what he want to go grow up on, he want to grow up, what he want to be. And he told me that he want to be a police to shoot people. And my heart broken, and I really sad for the news. I tried to talk to him, and I bring the police to my classroom to give it a speech and explain what the police do. They don't just shoot people. And I just go back to that 7 years ago and thinking on the root of all of this problem is taking God out of the classroom because I couldn't explain to them about God and how important it is for us to pray for the family, to unite family, because in the root of the family is what all of this profession and all of these people grew up in our society.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And so pray for that soul. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. I don't know if you made all that out. Her phone was a little crackly, but a preschooler, for those who couldn't make it out, preschool teacher, and she was teaching 1 year and asked about professions, and the young boy said he wants to be a policeman because he wants to shoot people. And of course, she did the right thing. She brought the police in to explain what they really do. Now, he was a little boy, but doctor, I want to give you final thoughts here as well as we wrap that up. You heard her remarks. Family is what she was talking about. We do need family. I think there's a special diabolic attack on family today. And we see it in the breakdown of it. You know, when the Baltimore riots took place several years ago, I remember a stat that stood out to me that two-thirds of households, of men in that state, came from fatherless households. We're missing fathers. You know, we've got lack of God, as she points out, and so much more. Give you the final thoughts here as we approach the chaplet.
Well, look, that's another piece of this, right? Fatherlessness, broken families. I think you mentioned that the killer and the young man in this case comes from that background himself, right? I mean, that is obviously another symptom of our social sickness. I think something you alluded to that needs to be discussed is violence itself, right? It goes to Narita's point about, this little boy saying, I want to be a policeman because policemen shoot. We have a very violent culture, right? I mean, our culture is deeply violent. Young people play violent video games. Older people like us go watch violent movies, right? Like, we have a very violent culture, and that's another aspect of this problem. And again, it's a spiritual, right? That makes it a spiritual problem at that point.
You're right. That's the bottom line. I think at the heart of this is something deeply spiritual. Dr. Capizzi, thank you. Stay with me when I return.
You.
We'll pray the chaplet.